Vihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopidana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Gopidana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajadana Rangana Yashoda Nandana Brajadana Rangana Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yama Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Kunja Vihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopidana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopidana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Narada Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajadana Rangana. Yashoda Nandana Brajadana Rangana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Madhava Kunja Vihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. All the rest of the assembled devotees, all the rest of Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, Text Number 18. Word meaning, Sattvam, the mode of goodness, Rajaha, the mode of passion, Tamaha, the mode of ignorance, Iti, all these, Nirgunasya, of the transcendence, Gunatara, are three qualities, Stiti, maintenance, Sarga, creation, Nirodeshu, indestruction, Grihitaha, accepted, Mayaya, by the external energy, Vibho, of the Supreme. Satvam Rajastamayati,
Satvam Rajastamayati,
Nirgunasya Gunastraya,
Stiti-sarga-nirodheshu
Grihita-maya-vibho
Satvam
rajastamaiti
Nirgunasya-gunastraya
Stiti-sarga-nirodheshu Grihita-maya-vibho Sattvam rajastama-iti Nirgunasya-gunastraya Stiti-sarga-nirodheshu Grihita-maya-vibho Sattvam rajastamaiti
Nirgunasya gunastraya
Stiti sarga nirodeshu
Hita maya vibho
Sattvam rajastamaiti Nirgunasya gunastraya Stiti sarga nirodheshu Hita maya vibho
Sattvam rajastama iti
Sattvam rajastama iti
Nirgunasya gunastraya
Nirgunasya gunastraya Stiti sarga nirodheshu
Grihita maya vibho
Sattvam rajastamaiti Nirgunasya gunastraya Stiti sarga nirodheshu Hita maya vibho
Sattvam
rajastama iti
Nirgunasya gunastraya
Stiti sarga nirodheshu
Hita maya vibho
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the master of the external energy manifested by the three material modes, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And as master of this energy, he is ever unaffected by the influence of such bewildering energy. The living entities, the jivas, however, are affected by or susceptible to being influenced by such modes of material nature. That is the difference between the Lord and the living entities. The living entities are subjected by those qualities. Although originally the living entities are qualitatively one with the Lord. In other words, the material modes of nature, being products of the energy of the Lord, are certainly connected with the Lord, but the connection is just like that between the master and the servants. The Supreme Lord is the controller of the material energy, whereas the living entities, who are entangled in the material world, are neither masters nor controllers. Rather, they become subordinate to or controlled by such energy. Factually, the Lord is eternally manifested by His internal potency or spiritual energy, just like the sun and its rays in the clear sky. But at times He creates the material energy, as the sun creates a cloud in the clear sky. As the sun is ever increasingly unaffected by the spot of cloud, by a spot of cloud, so also the unlimited Lord is unaffected by the spot of material energy manifested at times in the unlimited span of the Lord's rays of Brahma Jyoti. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sattvam Rajastama Iti Nirgunasya Gunastraya Sthiti Sarga Nirodheshu Grihita Maya Vibho. We're learning about who is superior to Lord Brahma. Narada Muni intuited that there was someone superior to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma said, yes, I'm not independent. There is someone above me, the Lord, God. And now we're learning something. He's telling us something about that person who is above him. So this is something about him. We know so many things about God, actually. Our books are full of things about God. Points that nobody else knows about, just like this one. There's a material world and there's a spiritual world. There's a world controlled by the three modes of material nature that we're all stuck in. And there's another anti-material world, as Prabhupada called it in his Easy Journey to Other Planets. So in that atmosphere, the modes of material nature do not operate. And that's where God lives. That's where He exists. So that's one difference. We're stuck here and He's living there in transcendence. Nirgunasya. He's not affected by the modes. Whenever we hear about the material world, we hear about, it's always, pretty much always said, the material world is synonymous with the three modes of material nature. It's constituted or controlled by, or the two are so intimately related, the three modes of material nature are so much part of the material world, so essential to what the material world is, that sometimes the material world is just called that place of the three modes of material nature. So here it says that although the Lord is, as Prabhupada translates it, the Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, the word there, transcendental to material qualities, so that's nirguna. So although he's nirguna, this phrase is kind of interesting, what comes up next. For the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts the material modes of nature. So you think, wow, he's actually has some relationship with the modes of material nature. But then there's this qualifying phrase here, grihita mayaya. Mayaya means through maya. He doesn't do it directly. This is actually a philosophical question that arises. Can God connect directly with the material energy? So the answer is not exactly correctly. He has parashya shaktir vividaya shuyate. He has innumerable energies and different categories of energies. And one of his energies is called the Bahiranga Shakti. He has different Shaktis. They're all expansions of his Swarup Shakti. Generally, there are three. They're classified generally as three. The Antaranga Shakti, which is his internal potency, which manifests the spiritual world and spirit in general. And Bahiranga Shakti is the material world. And then the Tathashta Shakti, which are the Jivas. So he does in himself directly consort or get in touch with this material world. So even though here it says accepted, grihita, he accepted the three modes of material nature that constitute the material world, he did it mayaya, by his external energy. Here he's called Vibho. Vibho is the great one. He's the great one above Lord Brahma. So let's go through this purport again. I want to make some comments on certain things as they come up. The Supreme Lord is a master of the external energy manifested by the three modes, three material modes, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And as master of this energy, he is ever unaffected by the influence of such bewildering energy. So he's the master in the literal sense. He's not affected. The master doesn't have to be affected by what the servants do. He's above it all. So Krishna is controlling it in some way, but he's not affected in the least. But the jivas are, that's the next sentence, the living entities, the jivas, however, are affected by or susceptible to being influenced by such modes of material nature. That is the difference between the Lord and the living entities. So here's one simple definition of God. He's not like us because he's not influenced by the material energy, which we all obviously are. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would often make this it's a simple explanation of what is God, especially to argue against those who claim that they were all God. In the West, this was brought to us by these bogus gurus who came here. No one ever thought of it before. I don't think Christians ever thought. Those of us raised in Christian culture, Judeo-Christian culture, nobody had this idea in their mind that actually I'm God. even those who were not religious didn't have that idea. Even they were atheists. There is no God. So how can I be God? Right? There's no God. How could I be God? But from coming from India, we learned, yes, there's a God. That's you. You're God. You don't have to be an atheist. You just worship yourself. Ahanga Hopasana. We heard about that in my last class. People worship themselves as God. But Prabhupada's simple definition was, no, God is Ishvara. He's the controller. He's not controlled. Janma karma cha me divyam. Krishna's birth and activities, they're divyam, they're divine. Krishna's not forced to come. Atma maya. He comes out of his own sweet will to this material world. Whereas we're forced to take birth, we're forced to get sick, we're forced to grow old. These bodies, which of course we identify with, things are happening to them, we don't have any control over it. So the simple definition of God is, he's not under control of material energy. He doesn't get old. He doesn't die. He comes and goes as he pleases. These things don't happen to him. So that's the, of course, that is our challenge, right? Prabhupada used to talk about this guru who had a toothache and said he was God. He was God, but he had a toothache. So he had to go to the dentist God to get it taken care of. So this is obviously not God. And then they come up with the crazy idea, well, that's just my lila. My lila to have a toothache. So, lila is anandamaya. Lila is joyful. Nobody does something, you know, to experience pain. Of course, people do because they're twisted minds. But they're getting some kind of perverse enjoyment out of it. That's another thing. Psychological problem. But still, they're actually looking for pleasure through the pains, really is what's happening. So we don't want to suffer, obviously. We're all in it for how we can satisfy ourselves. So Krishna, because he's vibho, because he's powerful, he makes all the arrangements, he never has to suffer. There's a story in Potomac, there was a painting there. And it showed Krishna sitting kind of like morose. And Prabhupada visited Potomac and he saw this painting. And he said, what is this? And the devotee said, well, I don't know what the devotee said, but Krishna looked sad. I was like, Krishna is never sad. And then Prabhupada said, well, we can call this Krishna has a headache. Is it, you know that story that Krishna had a headache and he wanted the dust from his devotee's lotus feet? So he said, we could call this painting Krishna has a headache to illustrate that pastime. So of course, that's not, Krishna didn't really have a headache, it's just a story to illustrate. So Krishna doesn't suffer, he never suffers. I'm thinking whether I should make this point. It's a shocking point Jiva Goswami makes. He makes it in the Bhakti Sambarbha and I think it's Paramatma Sambarbha. That in one sense, Krishna cannot have empathy. Usually we say for a person, we say that Krishna is completely compassionate. But to have the ultimate compassion, you have to have empathy. What does empathy mean? It means you have to know what the other person is experiencing. But Krishna cannot experience suffering. So he doesn't have empathy for the jivas. So Jiva Goswami actually makes this point. In a sense, you can say that Krishna doesn't have compassion because he doesn't have empathy. It's not possible for him, you can say. Because he's anandamaya, he's only full of bliss. So what does Krishna do? Why does he respond to our suffering in this world? He does it because he's responding to his pure devotees. He's responding to the compassion of the pure devotees because the pure devotees have experienced. In fact, it says, this is Jiva Goswami also makes this point. He quotes a verse at the beginning of this seventh canto that Krishna comes to this world. He's really not coming because he's feeling in his own heart the suffering. He's coming because of the devotion of his devotees who are still here in this material world. And they're not quite, they're ready to leave this material world. He's coming to get them, basically. That's the idea that Jiva Goswami makes. He's coming, everything Krishna does is in reciprocation with his devotees. That's really what it comes down to. In reciprocation to the devotion of his devotees. In other words, he's responding to the Radhani Shakti or Bhakti. He's responding to Bhakti. Krishna responds only to Bhakti. He doesn't respond to the three material modes, the modes of material nature and the suffering that they're causing in this world. He responds only to bhakti. And the bhakti is in the heart of his devotees. So he comes to this world to rescue, to help his devotees finish up their time in this material world. So it's, of course, when we hear that, we say, well, Krishna has no compassion. How can that be? No, it says, Radharani is the compassionate side of Krishna and so on. But sometimes, Jiva Goswami, he analyzes things very, very carefully in very minute detail and brings out insights that things you would never consider. In one sense, it doesn't matter. I mean, Krishna is perfect in everything that he does. So he's acting compassionately. But still, he never experiences suffering. So in that sense, according to the definition of what empathy is, it's not possible for him to have empathy. So my point is that he's not affected in any way with what goes on in this material world. To the jivas, the sufferings of the jivas in this material world, the actions of the modes of material nature. The actions of the mode, because the suffering is an action of modes of material nature. So he's not affected at all by what the modes of material nature are doing. He's affected by what the devotees are doing. In fact, he's so affected by what the devotees are doing that he says to Durvasa Muni, I have no independence. He tells Durvasa Muni, Durvasa Muni says, help me. And he says, I can't help you. I'm under control of my devotees. I have no independence. I do what they tell me to do, or I respond to what they do. That's an amazing thing. We get into the definition of God. This is, of course, the most wonderful thing about Krishna, is that everything he does for his devotees. We say he's self-willed, and of course he is. He has his own desires and so on, his own personality. But in his heart, in his heart of hearts, he has only one concern, and that is what his devotees want. Reciprocating their love, responding to the love of his devotees. That's what he does. So this is, of course, a very high level of understanding what Krishna is doing in the spiritual world, what God, what is in God's heart. I often think of this, how we, in Krishna consciousness, we learn about the psychology of God. The philosophers are trying to learn about God or figure out God in some kind of abstract way, as a philosophical principle, you might say, the philosophical God. And they have so many, you know, debates about whether God exists and so on. Just as a matter of, I guess you could say, tattva, we might say tattva of God. But we learn about who God really is in his heart, how he feels. What does he experience, actually? And of course, he reveals those things. He reveals them in certain ways. In Bhagavad Gita, of course, he expresses something of his love for his devotees. He's telling Arjuna, I'm teaching you all of this because you're my devotee, because you love me and because I love you. That's why I'm revealing these things to you. Then, of course, we have more and more confidential literature written by devotees who have experience and insight into exchanges with Krishna. So they reveal so much more about Krishna. So ultimately, actually we're hearing about Lord Vishnu. We're hearing about God. In one sense, Krishna is above God. But God in the sense of God, he's connected with this material world. That is the Western idea of God. They're thinking, he really, whatever's going on in the spiritual world, we don't know anything about that, or heaven, whatever. He doesn't seem to have much to do there because he's concerned about us. He's just looking down at us all the time. That's his, he's preoccupied. His whole meditation is about us here in this material world. But we know that that's just, you know, an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna, who's involved with the material world. And even then, it's not Lord Vishnu directly, it's his deputed agents, especially Shambhu, of course, Lord Shiva. He connects with the material world. So even, sometimes we think like this, maybe the Christian's idea of God is more like Brahma, actually, because he's the creator. That's what they think is the greatest thing about God, that he created all of this. Which of course is amazing. You look out at the heavens and we see what kind of person could make something like this. That's pretty amazing. What kind of power does he have? But in many ways, it's insignificant. It's like the gopis, they hear about Krishna, well, whatever. Sure, maybe you're God, you created all of this, okay. There are many places actually. It's sometimes said, I think I brought this up before, do the Brijbasis know that Krishna is God? Well, they do and they don't. You know, it's more like they do, but they don't care. And Krishna tells them that he's God, and they sometimes pray to him as if he's God. But that's basically irrelevant. Whether he's God or not, that's not why they love him. They don't love him because he's God. They love him because he's Krishna. Whether he's God or not is pretty much irrelevant. So it's the fact that he creates this material world, they don't really care about that. Whereas for us who are here, in fact, the acharyas, they comment that one reason is so important that in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami begins with describing the material world, how it's created, because that's what we're interested in. Yeah. We're stuck here in this material world, and our thoughts are all completely connected to this material world. And our own place in it, especially, how we can enjoy it, you might say. Maybe if we understand it better, we can enjoy it better. So that's what they're concerned about. The creation, God's creation. That's what they want to know about God. So we, of course, as devotees, we're always eager to go. We want to go up to the 10th canto. We want to hear about Krishna's Leela. Sometimes it's hard for us to hear about the creation. That side of Krishna. In fact, in a more elevated Vaishnava literatures like the Manashiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami, he tells us even, doesn't say these words exactly, but more or less, don't waste your time on Narayana. He says, focus on Krishna, Radha Krishna. Actually, Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavad Gita too, you know, right? Is it in the Manmana Bhavamadvato verse, I think, that purport? Where he says, we should not be distracted by worshipping other forms of Krishna, which is quite a shocking thing. Because we celebrate Ram Navami, we celebrate Nrisimhadeva's appearance, we worship all of the avatars. So when you read that statement, you think, wow, I shouldn't get distracted on Ram Navami by worshipping Lord Ram. So I see, when I read this, I think sometimes Prabhupada's Bhava just comes out. Because Krishna says, Manmana, think of me. I'm right here, Arjuna, in front of you. Think of me. Fix your mind on me, only on me. So Prabhupada is emphasizing that. So again, Raghunath Das Goswami is Manashiksha. He says, don't be distracted. Now this book is, of course, it's a very elevated book. It's when one is starting to really get to the point of having some real feelings, some bhava, some raga, some attachment to Krishna, and to cultivate it from that point on. So when you're really in the mood of cultivating your connection with Krishna, and maybe starting to think about your relationship with Krishna, your eternal relationship with Krishna, then you don't get distracted by these other aspects. So that's here we're hearing about Lord Vishnu. We're hearing about Lord Vishnu because we have to know, for us, to give up our attraction to this material world, we have to learn about the person behind it. And of course we also learn, we get so much instruction in the Srimad Bhagavatam about how to become detached from this material world. When I was reading this verse, this word nirguna, nirgunasya, I was reminded there's a famous verse in the 88th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The 87th chapter is the Shruti Stuti, the prayers of personified Vedas, Shruti Stuti. So the 87th chapter is that. So at the beginning of the 88th chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadeva Goswami, seems like the question seems to be just coming out of the blue. Says, why is it that Vishnu, the 87th chapter is of course prayers to Lord Vishnu. So Parikshit Maharaj says, why is it that Lord Vishnu is so opulent, but his devotees are so poor? And Lord Shiva, he lives like a poor person, and his devotees are rich. Well, this doesn't seem to make any sense. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a reason. He says why Parikshit Maharaj is asking this question. It's interesting because this has come up a few times here about why Parikshit Maharaj is asking certain questions and often goes to the audience. Actually, even in the 10th canto, he asks, why is Krishna doing this rasa lila, this immoral act? So Parikshit is asking things, and Prabhupada often explains, he's asking because there are people in the audience. The audience isn't full of pure devotees. So this is how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that this is why Parikshit is asking this question. He says, the plural is used in the question, we desire to know. Parikshit Maharaj is praising. He doesn't say, I want to know. He says, we want to know. So why is he saying we? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, to indicate the crowd of Shaivites who are also in the assembly. So they even had Shiva worshippers there listening to with Parikshit and Shukadeva. And they were glancing about after hearing while the prayers by the personified Vedas, while that chapter was being spoken. They were looking around, expressing opposition to what was just said. They were thinking, wait a minute here, is this really true, all this glorification of Lord Vishnu? We're Shaivites. We read the Shiva Purana. It says, but then, so anyway, that's the way they reacted. So that essentially that's how he explains it. Then a little later in his commentary, the second verse of the 88th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Shiva, however, is dependent on Lakshmi, the wife of Vishnu, for wealth. In other words, yes, Shiva gives all kinds of wealth, but isn't it interesting? He says, this is strange. Isn't it strange that Shiva, he gets the wealth, he's dependent on Lakshmi, who is Vishnu's consort, to get the wealth that he gives to his worshippers. He says, this is strange, Vishnu says. And he says, this is not expressed directly, however. In other words, it doesn't come right out and say it. So I just want to lead in here a little up to this verse about Nirguna. So this is how Shukadeva Goswami, how he answers the question. He says, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principle of material ego and goodness, passion, and ignorance. Then he says, the 16 elements have evolved as transformations of that false ego. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any one of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of his corresponding enjoyable opulences. So the purport here is very interesting. It says, false ego transforms into mind in the 10 senses and 5 physical elements, earth, water, fire. Lord Shiva appears in a special, so this is, I assume this is based on Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. It's our devotees' commentary. But Lord, how do devotees of Lord Shiva, how do they get opulence from him? So this is one way it's explained. Lord Shiva appears in a special linga form in each of these 16 substances. You know, I talked about this before, the prakriti, the prakriti creation, the 16 basic material elements. So Lord Shiva associates with those 16 material elements. In some ways, he's in control of them. So Lord Shiva appears in a special linga form in each of these 16 substances, which are worshipped individually as deities in various sacred locations in the universe. A devotee of Shiva may worship one of these, of his particular lingas, to obtain the mystic opulences pertaining to it. Thus, Lord Shiva's Akash Linga bestows the opulences of ether. Now we learn with the coverings of the universe, the enjoyment in each one of those coverings is greater and greater and greater as it becomes more and more subtle. In enjoyment is water is finer and greater than the enjoyment in the earth element, and the air element is even greater, and so on. So there's great pleasure, somehow enjoyment, to be had in these different elements of creation, and Lord Shiva's worshippers can attain that. Thus Lord Shiva's Akash Linga bestows the opulence of ether, his Jyotir Linga bestows the opulence of fire, opulences of fire, and so on. Okay, now here's the verse, now here's what he says about, that's what he says about Lord Shiva, and this is what he says about Lord Hari, of course, is what Vaishnava is called God. He's Hari. Hari Hari Nirguna Sakshat Purusha Prakriti Para Sasarva Dreg Upadrashta Tang Bhajan Nirgamo Bhavet. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. So Shiva's worshippers worship Shiva, who's connected to the modes, and Vishnu's worshippers, they worship Vishnu, who's disconnected. He's Nirguna. So then how this chapter unfolds, he says that Yudhishthira asked the same question to Krishna, and then Lord Krishna, he responded with this famous verse, Yasyaham anugrinami harishe taddanam shanai. I especially favor my devotees by taking away our opulence. Then in that wretched condition, they're rejected by everyone and then they take shelter of me. And then this whole chapter is actually this story of Vrikas, Vrikas, or the crazy demon who was ended up killing himself because he got the blessing from Lord Shiva that anyone's head that he touched would crack open, the person would die. So this leads into that. Why is that story there? Because it shows how ultimately Lord Shiva, the opulences he gives are often not beneficial. And it also shows how Vishnu is above Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva had to get help from from Lord Vishnu. He had to get bailed out, be saved by Lord Vishnu. So that's why, of course, this verse about Nirguna Krishna is not connected with the modes of material nature. And when the devotees worship Lord Vishnu, they also enter into that atmosphere. We worship Krishna, we end up, there's a verse that says this. No, what did this verse say, right? Yes. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. So we worship the Nirguna Lord, and we also enter into that atmosphere free of the modes of material nature. Okay, the translation again. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Thank you for really such an interesting class. This point about Krishna not feeling empathy. Remember the story about Radharani and the jackal? Isn't there some sympathy or empathy there? Or where is this story from?
Bhakti Purushottamaraj's book.
But where is that source?
He doesn't give any
reference. It's Radharani's compassion on the jackal. That's what the story is about.
Yeah. Yes. It seems to attract our desire to then pray to Radharani, who has this compassion.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada says that Radharani is a compassionate side of Krishna. So again, you can say he is and he isn't. Jiva Goswami gives this philosophical analysis, the logic of it. Yes, you can say that it's logical. That real empathy means you have to have experienced it yourself. In fact, Narada Muni makes this point with in the story of the cursing of Munivir and Nolakuvar, that unless you've been pricked yourself, you don't know what it's like to be. You can't feel real sorrow for seeing somebody else suffering the pricks of material nature. So they have to experience it. Yeah, I mean, we don't say Krishna's not merciful, he's not compassionate. We're not going to say that. It's just a philosophical point. Basically, the reason Jiva Goswami is making the point is that he's showing that Krishna's real concern is with his devotee. That's his existence. That's his life. The devotees are his life. Sadhava Hridayam Mayam Sadhanam Hridayam Tumaham. I'm the devotee's heart, and the devotees are my heart. That's why it's meant to emphasize this point, that Krishna really doesn't know anybody else, doesn't know anything else. He doesn't, and in one sense that's true. Even our picture of Krishna enjoying in Goloka Vrindavan, he's not thinking about the soul's suffering in the material world. I mean, in a sense he is, because his expansions are. But he's too absorbed. He's afraid of his mother. He's so absorbed in that. He's shaking and crying, and he's not thinking of the soul suffering in the material world when his mother is chasing him with a stick. So of course he's God, he can do, he's inconceivable, right? It's all inconceivable. But still, we could to bring out different aspects, like the Vaidurya Mani and the jewel gem, so many aspects of Krishna. So this is often pointed out as the most wonderful quality of Krishna, that he's controlled by his devotee's love. That's what he's controlled by. Not by the jiva's suffering in the material world. He's controlled by his devotee's love. That's the point, to emphasize that. Bhagavati,
I heard that story about the shoelaces and this, they were in the audience. I heard chapter 8, 8.
Uh-huh.
And the shoelaces and this, they
just wait until the mic comes.
We have the mic over here, so let's do it. Possession is no intense thing.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So many nice points in your class. And I had a lot of comments as you were going on, but
The first one, I think, was when you said that before the Mayavadis came to America, there was no concept of, us being God. And I have very little, but a little, bit of association with the Mormon thing, because mm-hmm. I was stationed in Salt Lake City for a while distributing books in the airport here. So I have a concept that their idea of perfection, and maybe somebody knows more and can clarify, is that you have Jesus Christ as your son. You have your own universe. I remember somebody walking by said, wouldn't you like to be matriarch of your own universe?
Yeah, I've heard that too. It's something like that.
So that's kind of like being God.
It's more like they want to be Brahma, it sounds right. like. Right. That's their conception. You get to rule over everyone else.
Right. Anyway, that was just a... and one of the other... a question is about... in the Bhagavad Gita, they used to have a picture of the two birds in the tree, mm-hmm. and the one is the witness bird, and the other one is, busily eating the fruits of the tree. So, is that like a visual of Jiva Goswami's point? The Krishna's watching. He doesn't partake in, but he's observing. And I think we're like advised to take shelter of the witness bird. Just see, if we could learn to see from Krishna's perspective, then when things happen to us, result of our own actions.
Yeah, of course, that illustration is about the super soul. I was thinking you could come up with different ideas. You might say, if the super soul were overcome by compassion, he would take away the free will of the jiva. He wouldn't be able to stand to see the jiva suffering. So he would against his own, he would take away the jiva's free will.
Oh,
just like parents do, right? Sometimes they lock the kid in the house. And you're grounded. Otherwise, you're going to cause trouble and hurt yourself. Anyway, it's just a
technical
idea.
Okay. When you were talking about how Prabhupada's described that don't meditate on any other form than the two-handed form of Krishna. I remember reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the description of the different Vishnu forms and who's got the conch shell and club and disc and lotus mm-hmm. flower in this hand or that hand. And one of the verses that mentioned the lotus, Prabhupada just started talking about Krishna being in Vrindavan and the lotus this and lotus that. It was just so sweet. So anyway.
You mean
when he's hearing about Vishnu, he's thinking of Krishna.
Yeah, he was here.
Actually, that's another point Jiva Goswami makes. I think it's in the Krishna Sandarbha. That actually all the hearers of the Bhagavatam, or the story, they're all related to Krishna when you get down to it, even the avatars. Because the devotees, they see Krishna. Especially Prakriti and Shukadeva. They're seeing Krishna everywhere. So when they see Matsya, they see, even Jayadeva Goswami, what does he say? Keshava Drita Matsya Shriya. He sees Keshava, Krishna, is coming in this form. So he doesn't exactly see Varaha, he sees Krishna in costume. His meditation is always on Krishna. So even when Prabhupada hears about Vishnu, even he calls him Krishna a lot of times. And even in the Bhagavatam, Krishna's name comes up all over the place. In the context where sometimes you would think, this should actually be about Vishnu, not Krishna. But Shukadeva Pariksha uses the term Krishna because that's who they're thinking about.
I was thinking about Krishna's nature. You're describing Krishna's nature, and that how, not that he's not compassionate, but even like bhakti, he doesn't give bhakti. His devotees give bhakti. From bhakti comes bhakti. So thinking about how his nature is, and you're pointing out about him being all he thinks about is his devotees. So the question comes to my mind, certainly we want to be considered as his devotee. He likes his devotee, so you want to be his devotee. I guess what is a devotee? Who is a devotee? I mean, we're trying to be devotees, so then are we considered as his devotees because we're trying to be devotees? Would he be compassionate to us? Would he think about us? Would he?
Well, we know there's a scale because of this verse, Yiyatamam papajjante tangsatava bhajami aham. Literally, Krishna says, bhajami aham. I worship, as the devotee worships me, I worship the devotee. So he responds to the devotee according to their purity. That's why the way Jiva Goswami, you know, he says that Krishna comes really to get the devotees who are just about ready to leave this material world. That's who really he's responding to them. He's helping them in that last little bit to get pure devotional service. So Krishna can respond. There's that one statement Prabhupada made that I was like, that's interesting. It has how the preacher, Krishna responds from within the heart of the person who is hearing the preacher. Krishna responds when he's responding to the desire of the preacher to help this person. So he tells the person, listen to this preacher telling you about Krishna. He awakens some interest within the heart of the person. But what is he doing? His response is actually to the preacher because of the preacher's desire. So yes, so depending on how pure, there's a whole scale of our purity. The more the purer we are, the more Krishna is apt to respond to our desires and our requests. Actually, I was just reading last night in Amrita Vani, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's teachings compiled. So he says there's a difference between an ordinary preacher and a pure devotee preacher. Because the power is different. A pure devotee preacher has great power to change someone. Whereas an ordinary, you can say, sadhaka preacher doesn't have that kind of power that the pure devotee has. Of course, we have the evidence of it in Prabhupada. How many people, how many hearts he changed. So that means the reciprocation is coming from Krishna. He's empowered. Sakshat. Directly empowered by Krishna.
That's a very contagious topic. Because while you were speaking, I was thinking that 11th canto, Krishna says he will deliver all the conditioned soul through those devotees. Nirapeksham munim shantam vimotsara samadarshanam anubrajami aham nittam pujayatam virenadi. This verse quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur on the incident where his Guru Maharaj's body was going to be dragged by those people, by those who claim they are the. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur claimed, no, I'm the only disciple. We all know that story. He said, even Krishna will be happy to take the dust of my Guru Maharaj's feet. I'm like, what? Why Krishna? So I said, that verse says that Krishna decided to purify the world through the foot dust of his pure devotee. He could have said, I will deliver this world. He could have said, but he said through the devotees. It makes sense. But then question raised, I remember in the audience, we are discussing one time. When we address Krishna as a Sarvagata and Mugdata, he is absorbed in his pastimes with the devotees. But he also has a simultaneously Sarvagata, all-knowing potency. Does he experience what we go through, or he is aware what we go through? Which one? Or neither? What is your...
Well, he knows because he's all-knowing. But he can't. It's like the sun can never experience darkness. Right? This is a good analogy. It's impossible. The sun is so powerful. But the sun cannot experience darkness. It just can't. So, it's just a fact that Krishna is only light. He can't experience darkness in this material world. And maybe intellectually, you can say, he can appreciate it. But what he experiences is love. That's what he experiences. He experiences love and ishakti. He experiences, that's his pleasure. That's what he experiences. That's what he responds to ultimately. So, you know, that's why I said, I don't know, should I say this? But it's a shocking thing when you read it, Jiva Goswami says. You know. He's basically just defining in a sense that real compassion means empathy, and empathy means you have to be able to experience it yourself. And Krishna can't. It's just not part of his constitution. It's just not part of reality. So he can understand. And even we could say he can perfectly understand it without experiencing it, if you want to state it that way. And he can act out of that perfect knowledge in a perfectly compassionate way. So in a sense, maybe it doesn't really matter. But the other side of it is it shows how dependent he is on his devotees. He takes the devotees' lead. He responds to their compassion because of his love for them. So it is another way of showing how the devotees are really, they're more powerful than God. Just like we say Radharani is more powerful than Krishna. She's Madan Mohan Mohini. So what is the pure devotee? The pure devotee is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Really, that because she's Bhakti Devi, and what is it? The pure devotee is saturated with bhakti. So in a sense, the devotee, something you see, one with Krishna, actually more one with Srimati Radharani. The devotees are all expansions of Radharani. So that's what Krishna is responding to. So that, you know, these things that help us understand sometimes other points are being emphasized, we get a little bit more insight into it by singing sometimes shocking things, as Jiva Goswami has done in this instance. We can't really try to grapple too much intellectually. Sometimes you just throw your hands up and say, I just accept.
You know, these are deep topics, I'm sure, and, you know, Jiva Goswami, oh, I know that, we all know that. And Jiva Goswami, you know, he had a statement there to say about it. We also hear that, you know, even simple activities come from Krishna. There is backside. You know, I mean, everything comes, you know. And then also we hear that Radha and Krishna, they're one. Even in Lord Chaitanya, you know, specifically manifest in that capacity. So, I'd be careful saying what Krishna can and can't do and what he can and can't experience. But I think there's a point there that, you know, his job really is rasa. And actually the whole material world, in one sense, it could be argued, is to facilitate that rasa, because rasa requires freedom. And, you know, so there's a lot of ways to look at it. I'd be careful how, you know, to essentialize it. There could be a lot of, just as this statement's provocative to us now, there could be many more provocative statements coming down the road. You know.
Yeah, so someone is counteracting my saying, Bhagavad Gita 10:11, Krishna said, out of compassion for them, how's the verse? How's the verse going?
Dwelling in their hearts, destroy the shining lamps.
Right. Is the word compassion in that verse?
Yeah.
Yeah, he says compassion. So Krishna, again, he shows compassion. I didn't say he doesn't show compassion. Did I? I didn't say he doesn't show compassion.
Hey, I didn't say he doesn't show compassion.
I said he can't. He doesn't have empathy. He can't experience it. That's all I said.
Yeah, but Jiva was Sumi's spy.
This might be my last Bhagavatam class.
But this is for his devotees, isn't out of compassion dwelling in their heart. So that's referring to the devotees.
Yeah, he's referring to the devotees, which reiterates my point, actually.
Yeah.
He's responding to his devotees.
Yeah, that's referring to the
devotees. Anyway, you will find, as I said, statements about Krishna's compassion.
I think they make a distinction between pain and suffering. A person can experience pain. Krishna might be aware that so-and-so is experiencing pain, but the person is experiencing suffering because he's not remembering Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna is not experiencing that suffering. That's the... I mean, there is a distinction between pain and suffering.
That raises a whole another philosophical question.
So
So you are saying pain is a knowledge, just awareness that somebody is suffering, but you don't experience that.
That Krishna can experience pain, but not suffering.
I was agreeing with him, but just making a distinction. I've heard that, you know, somebody can be experiencing pain, but a saintly person experiencing the same pain won't suffer the way a conditioned soul suffers.
Just like the Goswamis, they were feeling cold. They felt the cold, but they weren't suffering because of the cold.
Yeah. Or Jesus on the cross.
Suffering. Krishna's world, it's not the suffering of his conditional life.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, he's not experiencing conditional souls.
Okay. I think we'll stop here before we get.
This is very nice.
Well, John.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Very nice class,
Nagaraj.
You had everybody's attention.
Yeah.
That's what this speaker's meant to do.